Hi, welcome to the CX Tipping Point podcast. Citizens deserve a government they can trust. This is where we bring together leaders from government and industry to reveal the secrets behind how we're transforming customer and citizen experiences. On the show, we chat with unsung heroes who work behind the scenes to improve the lives of citizens and government employees. We learn from the people who do it and the challenges they face. I'm your host, Martha Doris. Let's do it. Welcome to the CX Tipping Point podcast. Today we have Colt Whittall, currently the CEO for Bravo 17, that does systems design, development, and optimization, and formerly the Chief Experience Officer at the U.S. Department of the Air Force and Space Force, and now supporting the Department of Defense in their CX UX efforts as well. So welcome to the CX Tipping Point podcast, Colt, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation. I was extremely honored when you suggested it. I've listened to your podcast many times, so I'm looking forward to this.
Well, I mean, you have a different twist on a lot of the stuff that we've talked about in the podcast, so I really think it'll bring a lot of dimension to a lot of the other conversations. First, the fact that you are working within DoD, and also just the innovation that you bring in terms of even working within DoD and the efforts and the progress that you've made in the Air Force and now within DoD. So why don't we start and just get an idea of how you found your way to working in the Department of Air Force and helping them to improve their UX UI?
Sure. I came out of the commercial sector. I was part of a digital agency that we founded originally back in 2000. It was a practice area within Deloitte Consulting. We spun it out, named it RoundArch. In 2005, we went through a further evolution, became a separate entity, and I was among a group that was able to buy into that. And we grew it and sold it eventually. And then, you know, I had the opportunity to kind of leave and take some time off. And I had always been interested in working and doing something with the federal government. It goes back a long ways. When I was in graduate school, I interned in DC, worked for the FCC on the narrowband PCS auction, first ever spectrum auction. And I worked for AT&T on the high definition television project to get their, to basically set the standards for high definition television. And I did some other things having to do with kind of the intersection of government and technology. So I've always been passionate about this general space. And so when I left the company that we had, I'd been part of, founding and growing basically, I wanted to do this. And so I reached out to the CIO of the Air Force at the time, Bill Marion. And it was not actually to get a job. It was, I reached out to a lot of people just to kind of get some advice. Like, if I want to go do something in technology and government, what are the pathways to do that? I'm thinking USDS, maybe Defense Digital Service, maybe 18F. And I reached out to Bill on LinkedIn. It was the Wednesday evening before Thanksgiving, and he responded on LinkedIn about 5 minutes later and said, holy cow, you're available. Meet me at the Pentagon on Tuesday. And I flew up to DC and we began hammering out the idea of having a chief experience officer to focus on raising the bar for user experience across IT and systems in the Air Force. So that's how it happened.
It's interesting that the approach that you took, because I know usually when I give that advice about going out and talking to people and getting advice on, what's available, it's people in the government looking to go into industry. It's the first time I've heard of someone in industry who's kind of decided they want to go back in government. And then they just start, going out and talking to people and getting an idea about where you can get into government service. And, I spent a lot of years in the government and I've been doing this for about 8 years since I retired. And I How do you feel about, I mean, doing government public service, there's really nothing like it, and the feeling that you get, from the differences that you can make. So I'm sure you've felt like that in this time too.
Oh, I completely agree. No, I wouldn't. I was in the CXO role for 4 years and 3 months, and I would not trade it for anything. I mean, it was a fantastic experience. I learned an incredible amount. And we made a lot of progress and did a lot of things that, myself and a lot of other people are quite proud of. So I wouldn't trade it for anything. It's fantastic. And by the way, I put out the offer just like, Mr. Marion was, available to me. If anybody wants to talk more about this, I'd be happy to chat with anybody. Just reach out to me on LinkedIn and we'll chat. But I'm going to attempt to get you in the government.
Well, that's a great offer. I'm sure there's, we'll see what kind of readership or listenership we have out there that we can we'll put it in the description too. So
Okay.
I know, most agencies that make UX CX a priority, they usually have something that's happened. Of course, at the VA they had, issues with the scheduling for medical center. Is there anything within the Air Force that kind of spurred their interest to make this a priority?
So I don't think it was one single burning platform. It was more like let's call it, a smoking platform for a long time. But there were a lot of senior leaders in the Air Force that were complaining about IT service levels, computers that take a long time to boot up and spinning, disks and stuff like that. And then, of course, they were hearing those same complaints from the field, from airmen. And this just went on for a long time. And you began to see it in conference presentations and in public and in chat lines online and so on. So it was clearly something that needed to be addressed. And then I was hired to address that and help them address that in June of 2019 is when I started. But then I would say probably the closest to a burning platform would be about 2 years ago. There was a letter that got a lot of attention from an airman named Michael Kanaan on LinkedIn. And we know it as the Fix My Computer memo or the Fix My Computer letter. And it was just an open letter and it really resonated. It touched a nerve in the whole IT ecosystem, not just in the Air Force, but across the DoD. And the reason was it basically, and you can go look it up and read it, I encourage you to. It made the argument that, wait a minute, senior leaders are talking about all of these, big grand strategies and technology vision and being a modern Air Force. And keep in mind at the time we had just created the Space Force. And so we got all these big strategies related to AI and information dominance and so on and so forth, and JADC2 and multi-domain. JADC2 and command and control. And, wait a minute, we can't fix our computers. And so the letter identified this fundamental disconnect, right? You must be able to do the basics very well in order to do all of those super advanced things. And airmen pick up on that, right? They see the disconnect and it makes them question whether or not we can deliver the big things if we can't do the small things well. So that I would say is probably the closest to an actual, exploding, burning platform that we had. But at the time, fortunately, we were already well down the road of addressing the issue.
Well, I think there's a couple points in there. I mean, to talk about the value of improving the technology, provided to the airmen and the productivity levels, efficiencies, how that impacts recruitment, all of the things that that impacts, I think is really interesting because, we're always looking for people to document and capture the business value or the entire the value of UX, CX. And you can see from just that conversation or that example where you can really capture the productivity. I mean, I know if you're working in an organization and you're sitting there with, 30 seconds or a minute of something spinning on your desktop, that you can't get to. It's very frustrating and a lot of time. So I think that's really an important thing for everybody to think about as they're thinking about whether they take this into consideration in the work that they do. So what were your like roles and responsibilities when you went into this chief experience officer job?
So I was in the position where I could really kind of define it based on need. It was not something that had ever existed before. And so when we wrote the position description, and this would be something if any other agency is considering doing this, I mean, I'd be happy to share the position description. But we wrote it to cover a few things. There was a strategic advice component to senior leaders, you know what I mean? Just strategic consulting on how do we solve the problem. That was part of it. But the biggest thing was really to come up with an approach and execute it to raise the bar for user experience and performance of enterprise IT. That was kind of the big overarching number one thing. And that made sense because I work for the CIO. Another part of it was to do essentially the same thing for software and applications, which is a trickier problem because in the DoD environment and in a lot of environments, frankly, the way that that is acquired, the way systems are acquired is much more decentralized. It's owned by, the Air Force doesn't really have one IT portfolio of systems. It has many portfolios of systems. There's 100 something logistics systems, and there's 100 something personnel systems, and there's 50 something, 25, 50 something training related systems. And so there's multiple portfolios of systems out there. And especially once you get out into the long tail of highly specialized weapon systems, logistics systems, and so on and so forth, there's just a lot of them out there. And so that's a harder problem to solve. We can talk about that. There's still good strategies to do that. And then the other area was, in the position description was about mega user journeys. And the mega user journeys are kind of, at least that's what I call them. There are certain user journeys that are cross-cutting across the entire organization. They affect practically everybody. And then, if you think about it, they just consume a vast amount of time and resources. But it turns out that they're not even really automated all that well because they just cross so many of the stovepipes and organizations and tools, platforms, and so on. So one of the big ones, and we can talk more about this later, but that I wanted to focus on was PCSing, which is permanent change of station. So it's basically out processing from one job and location and base into another, and then in processing into another job and location and base. That PCSing stuff, it's a tough one to crack. And it's also, like I said, it consumes a lot of resources and time. It also causes a lot of delays, causes a lot of lost productivity. And frankly, it causes a lot of lifestyle stress, both for the airmen and all of the dependents of the airmen.
Yeah, that's definitely one that you can see with families disrupting, kids with in schools and spouses and all that. So that's a good one to focus on in terms of a mega journey. When you first went into the to this position, what kind of reaction did you get in terms of did people understand what UX was? Did they, how did you, I mean, when you talk about hundreds and hundreds of personnel systems and was there any, how did you communicate with so many people?
Well, first of all, I turned down pretty much zero invitations to talk about it. So I spent a lot of time talking about it. When I took this job initially, I think I had a little bit of fear of public speaking, and I assure you, I definitely do not anymore. So I spent a lot of time out evangelizing, and then we created some videos, which are, by the way, they're owned by the government. So if anyone needs, videos to promote user experience and performance and the methods and so on, we've got some good ones actually. And it's any government agency can pick it up and use it. So combination of videos, a bazillion public speaking appearances and internal appearances to any organization that I could go talk to. I started doing a fair amount of writing. I started putting a user experience update blurb in the CIO's newsletter. We started a something called the User Experience Community of Interest inside the Air Force. So if you are anyone connected to user experience of systems, IT, whatever, you can join, and they have a monthly call. It's a fairly typical format, right? There's a monthly call. We make some announcements, maybe a little discussion, some introductions. We have a speaker come in from the outside. And also pretty quickly we realized that I wanted the government people to be on it because I wanted it for their career development network, but we also wanted outside contractors to be available, to be able to be invited. And so they join too and can be part of the discussion. So if you are a, user experience designer working in the DoD space, you're welcome to join. And you just get on the list and, away you go. So creating a community was also very important. So it was all of those things. And then anytime I had an opportunity to engage senior leaders, in the Air Force, I would do that. So it's a combination of things to
So
get the word
you,
out.
I think I've heard you say that the senior leaders really kind of understood it, but the middle level people didn't necessarily understand what you were talking about. I think that's a common issue both in customer experience and user experience. Was there any secret sauce that you were able to use to, or fairy dust that you were able to sprinkle on to get people to understand?
So, yes, and you're correct that I have said that, and it's definitely true. I generally found that at the senior levels, they don't understand the terminology related to UX and CX, and they don't obviously know the tools, and they couldn't tell you how to fix it, but they understand there's a problem because they're hearing it directly from people all over the organization, and they want to make it better, and they experience these things themselves because they're users too. So, oh yeah, no, they generally get it, and they're generally supportive of what you need to do. So as far as everybody else kind of in the middle, they all have a different take on it, right? In some cases, like let's take acquisition people. Acquisition people, when I would speak to them, the consistent thing I would hear is, yeah, we know there's a problem with user experience, of software or IT. The problem, Colt, is we don't know how to put it into an RFP, and we don't know how to evaluate vendors for it. So if you can tell us how to write the requirement and then how to evaluate for it, we'll do it. And I'm like, great. So went and worked on that with a number of people and came up with what we call the User Experience Tools, Tactics, and Procedures, or TTPs, got them approved. They're published on the acquisition website in the Air Force. And it's essentially a set of language that you can copy into a Section L and a Section M in an RFP. And should help select for better capability to deliver good user experience. So that's just one example. So the acquisition people, that's kind of how we approached them. Program managers are tougher, right? Program managers, they're very accountable to deadlines. They're accountable to budgets, and so you have this. You're telling them, wait a minute, user experience of your system. Users are complaining. They don't like it. It could be better. And they look at you and say, well, wait a minute, this sounds like something that's going to cost more and take longer to release. I can't take any more risk in my program. I don't have the budget for it. Sorry, don't want to talk to you about it. I get that a lot. And that's one where you basically just have to go and then speak to the customer of that system and work it from that angle usually. So it's a long-winded answer to your question, but it's kind of complicated. It depends on which group you're talking about specifically, how you have to work with them.
I think in any of this, there's not a one size fits all for anything, right? You do have to really understand the customers, what their expectations are, how they what the experience is that they're having, and really identify your actions or, strategies based on those specific situations.
Totally agree. But I would say this, I think there is one overarching theme that I think helps address a lot of these issues, and it's data and feedback. Because when you've got a good framework of metrics, for performance at the glass of enterprise IT as users experience it, and then for user experience with systems. If you have a good mechanism for tracking metrics on user experience and tracking feedback on user experience, and if it's consistent, then you have a framework where you can start to discuss these things at a programmatic level across the whole portfolio or across portfolios of portfolios and get more strategic about it and then kind of put pressure where it needs to be put.
Yeah, and I think when you have data, it takes the emotion out of things, right? Like if you've got good data, right, you can they t that tells the story, and it's not I believe this or you believe that. It is what does the data really tell us? We d have done that before when I was at GSA, and we started getting feedback from different customer bases and things that we, and I think generally in the government, because people work so hard, they think that the experience people are having is a little better than the experience that they're really having. And so just getting that feedback, it's a gift to be able to help you diagnose and know where to take actions that are meaningful.
For sure.
What about your customers? Did you all identify your customers as airmen, or was it broader than that?
So, really good question. I identified our customers as airmen, and the central strategy that we were following was let's treat airmen as customers. Let's measure, user experience and performance from their perspective, real time, as they do their part of the mission, and then let's work to improve that. I mean, that's fundamentally the strategy. Like, that's my elevator pitch right there on what we tried to do, what we did, and what they continue to do. So that was our customer we were focusing on. So what did I exclude from that? All right. Well, I didn't exclude any airmen. We were serving them all. That includes civilians, because when you talk about in the military, you can talk about the Air Force airmen. What you're really saying is active duty, guard, reserve, and civilians working for the
Right.
Air Force. So it's all of them. The only group that's not in there are, the general public, veterans, people that are outside the firewall, not using our applications. Although we do support, so the Air Force does support several million external users, mostly veterans, wounded warriors, dependents, et cetera, including me, right? So, me as a former Air Force employee, I'm still a user of some Air Force systems. So, but I focused on the inside the firewall applications.
Interesting. So when you began, what were your original, your early priorities, when you started under this, in this endeavor, and what kind of improvements were you initially looking to accomplish?
So for several months, I was pretty sure that I had the job. It was kind of in the final approval process for a long time. So I had time to prepare, which was nice. It was a real gift. And so I went in with basically a playbook, which is not something I've ever really been able to do in another situation. And then I spent about 90 days sort of evaluating the situation, requesting data, finding that they didn't have a lot of data about user experience. In fact, that's nothing. In fact, a lot of the data about user experience was purely anecdotal. Rating systems where people sort of self-evaluated applications and stuff like that. So, but if you look at the playbook, the big overarching thing was, we didn't have any tools or processes to measure performance or, user experience at the glass. And we needed that. We needed a voice of the customer system. We needed digital experience monitoring. We needed some other things. So pretty quickly, I started focusing on getting that in place. The voice of the customer program was actually remarkably smooth. We got that done quickly. I started in June of 2019, and we had that up and running by January 2020. And the reason it happened so quickly was that the Air Force has something called the Air Force Survey Office. They already have one of the major software as a service survey platforms under contract, and it was already FedRAMP moderate accredited. So basically, what we did is we created a pulse survey that runs on that platform, and it's already integrated with Air Force Directory Services. So we have a big advantage that you don't typically have in a voice of the customer program. We have all the data about our who we're surveying already. So, you know, I don't have to ask a lot of demographic things. You know, I can ask, you know, two or three. The core survey is really only three questions, and then there's some optional stuff. So we set that up. That was fantastic, and that's been running since January of 2020. It's a monthly pulse survey that hits basically 1/12 of the Air Force each month. Every airman should get it once a year. So that's not too burdensome from a survey perspective. There's three core questions. The rest is optional, and there's some interesting optional sections we can talk about. So we got that going, and we've had that continuous data since January of 2020. We added a section about a year ago to start tracking applications because we wanted a way for at least the applications that most people use, you know, some of these personnel things, training things, and so on. We wanted to get feedback on that. So we added an optional section onto our survey, which is called the Air Force IT Pulse. We added this optional section where you can pick applications you want to provide feedback on. And then there's three questions. One has to do with utility, one has to do with usability, and the other is basically what would you change to help you do your job better? So very job focused. And so we started tracking that data, and we have for the applications are there's roughly 40 applications with more than 50,000 accounts. Some of them have more than 500,000 accounts. So these are big applications that, like I said, a lot of people use. And so we can draw the curve from, you know, the most usable, you know, it calculates something, it estimates something called system usability scale. We can draw the curve from the best system usability scale down to the worst system usability scale of the 40 applications that have more than 50,000 accounts. And we can track them all over time to see which ones are getting better, which ones are getting worse. And hopefully, you know, there's some right now that are being in the process of being replaced. So we'll be able to know, did the replacement affect it positively or negatively? What happened? So we did that. We implemented digital experience monitoring. And that's, you know, it uses a product that puts an agent on the computer. We started out with 1% of the computers on the unclassed network, and then eventually we ramped it up to 5%. But even with that small sample, and we're putting the agent on the most active computers at that base, we're on now most bases, but now we know, like, you know, at this base, you know, here's how, you know, the activity response time or wait time or whatever for the key applications on the endpoint. So we have a very good picture of what user experience is doing of the computer and of the software running on the computer. So we added that. We added some monitoring of the network at the base boundary and on the bases. That is really what it's doing is it's running tests, you know, 24/7, 365, same set of tests all around the world at basic, you know, most of our bases. And it's telling us how certain services are responding, you know, coming back to the United States or back to the servers. So it helps us know that the DNSs are working properly, that the PKI infrastructure is working properly, our encryption infrastructure, all of those things. It's making sure that all of that plumbing in the network works properly, because without it, you're not going to have a good user experience when somebody's trying to like order an engine to go on a plane somewhere around the world.
Let's take a quick break. Do you know someone who has gone above and beyond to provide services to the American people? Well, this is your opportunity to recognize them by submitting a nomination for the 2024 Service to the Citizen Awards. To nominate a champion of change, go to servicetothecitizen.org.
You know, I could go on. I already talked about the UX acquisition, TTP. Another one is user experience monitoring. And this I'm super proud of. And frankly, I think I can announce something in public that we haven't, that's brand new. So What user experience monitoring is, it's really just a bundle of services to monitor applications. So in the federal government, there is the Digital Analytics Program, which I'm sure you've heard of. And it's basically Google Analytics. It's run by GSA, I believe. It's now, as part of OMB M23-22, it's now being rolled out across all of the federal government, including the Air Force, for public sites. But that's the thing. It's public sites. Our internal sites that are on our network and require a CAC card to log into or VPN to get into, we can't use the digital analytics program to get to monitor that. So what we did is we stood up an open source product, kind of like the digital analytics program. It's on the Air Force's Cloud One platform. And it took a little while for people to catch on, but we are now, we have about somewhere between 125 and 150 Air Force systems that are in the queue to instrument their code to take advantage of basically our internal version of digital analytics program. So that's huge because that's going to give web analytics to all of those programs. And then there's a way that they can get user feedback in a standard way. So that, we're some of the things that OMB is doing federal government wide, we're trying to do similar types of techniques to help raise the bar across our internal portfolio of applications, since the OMB stuff can't really touch those, if that's making sense.
So, my
Those are a
office,
few.
at GSA is the one who I was there when DAP was created. So it's very it's music to my ears to see the work that we did,
Well,
the impact that it's had over so many years.
I love what they're doing. I mean, that going to that site and seeing that data for all of those public facing, it's amazing. I mean, it, and so it, we've been working on this internally at the Air Force now. It's taken a while, I got to be honest. I mean, if you think about what a web monitor or a web analytics tool does, it's monitoring all the activity on that site. So from a cyber and a security perspective, I'm sure you can imagine that it was not the easiest thing to get accredited. But so it's been a while going through it, and we had to configure it carefully and do some things to make sure that we could secure it, and we can, and it's internally hosted, and it's very, very secure. And it so but once we got through all of those wickets, we're now in a position where we can scale it up. And the good news is, and this is a little bit of a sales pitch for that service, we call it UEM, or user experience management, is any organization that's using applications on DoD networks, on NIPRNet, so at the CUI level, basically IL4 or 5. I realize some of the audience isn't going to know these terms, but the DoD people will recognize them. They should be able to get to this and use it. So if you're over at the Army and you need a way to do web analytics on your, business applications inside the firewall, this should be an option for you.
Interesting. Are you going to have, how with the digital analytics program, there's the analytics.usa.gov where you can look at a certain level, not what the agency's view, but from the outside view. Are you going to have like an analytics dashboard for everybody to internally, I guess, to look at the systems.
Well, it's a phenomenal question, and I can't believe I'm saying this. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, the
Maybe it's
data
an
is
idea that
there.
you can
It's a
take.
phenomenal idea, and I love the idea. And frankly, I'm a believer in that kind of transparency because it helps drive the whole community higher. So hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, that would be my recommendation anyway.
Absolutely.
Sometimes you have to stagger the release of that data in a way that it's kind of kept really close hold so that people who it's their data, they can like review it and make sure everything's operating before you like let it out more and more. At least that's what we had to do with the DAP program with analytics.
Yeah, and I can understand that. I mean, some of
Yeah,
this has been
I
for
can too.
acquisition sensitive things and so on and so forth. I mean, I get it, but no, and you're probably right. That's probably what will need to happen.
So, how did you describe your role to as a chief experience officer when you went out to support all the, all of the different system owners? And I'm interested in how you described this function as part of the mission of the Air Force, because like I feel like in the customer experience space, people have thought about customer experience as warm and fuzzy and, making people happy or delighting them or those kind of words. And in reality, it is a mission function, right? Like you're, so I'd love your thoughts on that.
That's a really good question. So it depended a little bit on who I was talking to. So if I were talking to people at headquarters, they weren't quite as receptive. But here's the reality is that user experience at headquarters is significantly better than user experience in a lot of the field.
Right.
There's a pretty big gap. And so when you're talking to people in the field and you tell them you're working on improving user experience and performance of IT, their reaction is, "Oh my God, thank you. It's about time. Tell us how we can help." And you go at headquarters and you sometimes get that, but you don't always get it quite as much. So it's a little bit on who you're talking to. Young airmen are the most receptive. Technology is like breathing to them, right?
Right.
They just have a different level of expectation. And so you mentioned recruiting and retention earlier, I think. And I mean, I don't have any data to say for sure that there is a direct link between UX performance and recruiting and retention. However, anecdotally, I hear it a lot, you know what I mean? Because when things don't work and are clunky and you have to deal with it all the time and it makes it hard to do your job, it reflects badly on the organization, it causes problems. And if airmen are experiencing that, that means that their younger brother or sister is hearing about it back home. And that's who we're trying to recruit, right? So I guess short answer to your question is it's the reaction is a little all over the map. I do get occasionally the reaction that says it's not about making it pretty. And I used to hear that a lot. And so I've adopted a trick. And the trick is I tell a story, which I'll tell very quickly right now. And by the way, this is even on my coin. I had a coin made for the chief experience officer
I think I have my
because
coin right up there.
oh yeah, there you go. There was the challenge coin. So it's a challenge coin, and it has a reference to Lieutenant Colonel Paul Fitz on it. And basically, the story is this. And the point of the story, I'll tell you the point first. The point of the story is user experience is actually in the DNA of the military in a way that is profound and historical and significant that people don't even realize. In fact, the modern field of human factors engineering was practically invented by, the Army Air Corps. But what was happening was in World War II, we had thousands of B-17s and other bombers flying over Europe, and they would come back, and the loss rate on them was horrifying. I'd highly recommend the book "The Bomber and the Mafia" by Malcolm Gladwell. You ought to read it. But we were losing an incredible percentage of them. As they were landing back in England for reasons that made no sense at the time to the Air Force. And so they hired a former airman named Lieutenant Colonel Fitz, who had gone back to get a psychology degree. And Lieutenant Colonel Fitz, they hired him with the objective of understanding pilots and pilot psychology and helping them select for better pilots, basically. In other words, the Air Force decided they had a pilot problem. And Lieutenant Colonel Fitz started looking at the records of all of these crashes and saying, "Wait a minute, we're having the same patterns. We've got these recurring patterns of things like, on landing in England, the bomb bay doors open instead of the landing gear come down. Well, what's going on here? Is that a bad pilot or is that a bad plane?" And started analyzing the controls in the cockpit and realized that they needed to redesign the controls in the cockpit. And so they came up with techniques like shape coding, which basically is, they used to have the same levers in a row to operate all kinds of different things on the plane. And instead, they would shape one like a flap to operate the flaps, and one like a, whatever to operate something else, one like a wheel to operate the landing gear, and so on and so forth. Some of that shape coding survives in cockpits to the present day. And some of that work that Lieutenant Colonel Fitz did, and some of the formulas and equations and research that he did, is still in textbooks in human factors engineering and avionics to the present day. In fact, my son took a human factors in aviation class in graduate school and or in undergrad. And I actually bought the textbook because I just thought it'd be cool. And I'm going through the textbook, and Lieutenant Colonel Fitz is on like 50 pages.
Wow.
So that and it all goes back to the Air Force and World War II. So, again, back to the point of the story. Well, the point of the story is, wait a minute, we are not trying to make things pretty here, right? This is a defense department. We're not
Right.
selling vacations, we're not selling movies and entertainment, we're not selling cosmetics, we're not selling, this is about putting bombs on target and getting airmen home, alive. That's what this is about.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's such a cool lesson learned story, for other people in government, because they're, that's what we're there to do, is to serve the people, the customers, the citizens, the public, employees. And so being able to serve them, it crosses over in all of these different areas. So why don't we, what were some of the challenges that you found, or your biggest challenges? It sounds like, I'm sure there were things that came up, but in such a short period of time, you really did make a huge impact.
Well, I think there were a lot of challenges for sure. So one of the things we struggled with was that the culture in DoD IT is more about kind of operating networks than delivering really good performance at the desktop, right? Desktop type of IT support and software support, for whatever reason, the incentives and the career paths and things, in IT, I just don't find they're, as aligned around some of those basic fundamentals. But it's those basic fundamentals that actually make the biggest difference in user experience when you're talking to IT. And same thing goes for applications. When you hear IT discussed in the Defense Department, for whatever reason, a lot of the culture around the IT organization is very focused on acquisition and functional requirements and writing functional requirements and shall statements, but not making room in the program to actually design the system, in a user-centered way. And so those were big challenges, I would say, within acquisition and within the operator culture of IT. And then another one, in the PCS example that I talked about earlier, we actually got using money from innovation funds, and I'm making a long story very short. So we designed and developed a mobile app that walks an airman through the PCSing process and helps streamline it as much as possible. And even built the back-end pieces in Salesforce because Salesforce is what our personnel organization uses to kind of manage the workflow. And so, but the final integration and integration testing within the personnel organization, we couldn't get done just because, the organizations just kind of didn't totally buy into it. And there were other issues and things that got in the way. And by the time we could work through those issues, we were in a position where we couldn't continue the rest of the project. So it kind of ran the clock out. So I think now they're trying to revive the PCS project and get it live again.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking, but those kind of things happen. And so sometimes you get out over your skis in innovation space, which we did. We were pushing hard.
Right.
And but you know we ran into you know resistance and silos and other things. And again, I'm making a long story short. So there are people now that are attempting to revive that and get it rolling. So I don't know, those are examples.
I think in the customer experience, user experience area, you really do, you know, you get into a lot of people's space, right? And you push things that are very different than the normal ways things have been done, and it does, it's it does get rattle some skin sometime, you know. It's not an easy job to do, for sure. So the
Well,
success, go
I'll add
ahead.
one more. So I mentioned earlier that we're tracking system usability scale of the top 40 applications, 40 most widely used applications. The number one rated is an application called Digital University. And Digital University, essentially what it does is it bundles together some of the leading IT and software development training platforms, bundles them together, commercial IT training platforms, into kind of one experience, and then layers on top of it a set of kind of learning paths and plans that are all designed to feed our software factories with airmen that have the skills that we want them to have. So it's very responsive to the software development community and what they need, and very responsive to what airmen like and want to use, because we're basically asking them on their personal time, you know, to go get skilled up. And, you know, we're also giving them a resource so that when they run into problems in their work, they can go get trained in a very specific thing, you know, with the latest tool. So Digital University, very user-centric program. They measure, they track user feedback all the time. They're very responsive to it. And the way that they do that, they get a very flexible contract vehicle. They got a very flexible team. They have a great process for taking feedback, triaging it, figuring out what they need to respond to, making some design changes, some copy tweaks, maybe some business rule changes, maybe changing the curriculum a bit, whatever they need to do in order to drive their metrics higher. So they're just super responsive to all of those things. I mean, it is a user-centered, it's they're operating a product like it's a commercial digital product. And that's fantastic. Well, here's the problem. It's not a tool, it's not a platform that came out of one of the big organizations in the Department of the Air Force. Therefore, it's a little bit of an orphan. So it's highly responsive to users, but it's a little bit of an orphan. So that's another type of challenge, you know, that's there.
You just never know where those little things are going to sneak up on you, do you?
No, you don't.
Well, all the successes, and I mean, I'm sure you learned a lot of lessons that can be applied to the DoD, at the DoD level. So, what's your next endeavor? How are you going to be working with DoD to help bring, you know, share what you learned and help them move in this direction?
Well, so I am doing a part-time advisory role as a what's known as an SGE or special government employee to the brand new I think they're still naming the organization, but I believe it's now going to be the Customer Experience Office under the DoD CIO. So I'm advising them a bit. And so you know we're still working on what the playbook is going to be. But I think a lot of the things that worked at the Air Force can be scaled across the DoD. That's my opinion, not speaking on behalf of the organization, my opinion. And in fact, some are. So the Navy has implemented many of the same approaches that we did at the Air Force and is having success, which is fantastic. So I think the playbook is probably going to be developed over the next few months. And I think it will probably include some of the things that we thought worked and frankly did work and we can show worked at the Air Force. That's my gut feel. And then I think there's going to be some other things. You know, one of the reasons why I was interested in working with the new CXO's office at DoD, there, by the way, there is a new customer experience officer whose name is Savan Kong, who came from Defense Digital Services. And one of the reasons why I wanted to work with this group is I think there's some policy things that they can do that will help kind of put the wind behind the back of efforts to improve user experience. And so that's an area where I really want to help them focus.
I mean, when you have the department level group taking some things on that they can identify products and services that can be used across all the services, the amount of time and energy and productivity and all that that you can gain by doing that is tremendous. So it's I'm happy to see that they're doing something at the DoD level to help take your playbook or write their playbook based on what you learn. I mean, it sounded to me as you were describing it, like when you sit when your first 90 days or whatever, it's really kind of identifying the current state, right? Like just taking some time to listen and talk to people and identify the current state, and then hear from customers, hear where the pain points are, and make your plan accordingly based on everything you've seen and heard in that time period. Is that, did I characterize it
Yeah, I think
correctly?
you're spot on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else you want to talk about today that we haven't kind of covered?
No, I think we got it. I guess maybe the only other thing that I would say is I'm all about measurable results and so I couldn't be prouder of the fact that we did produce some very significant measurable improvement over the course of this program, and I think the numbers are continuing to trend in a positive direction. Occasionally I hear a trickle, and the but so for example, in 2020, our user satisfaction with enterprise IT was about 5 points underwater. We had about 5 percentage points more dissatisfied users than satisfied. And in 2023, it's now about 2 times more satisfied than dissatisfied. So if you look at the chart of satisfied and versus dissatisfied from 2020, 21, 22, and 23, it totally flip-flops, and now we're about 2x more satisfied than dissatisfied. I mean, I hear a lot of presentations on things like digital transformation, and I look at that chart, and that is digital transformation. That's it. That's what we're here to do. And by the way, if you look at the underlying data, so if you look at the activity response times, the wait times, the other key metrics that we've been working on, they're all trending so that it lines up. You know what I mean? So it's not like people are just happier because they're just happier. They're happier because they're seeing some results. And it's not 100% even either, right? Some people are seeing results, some people have yet to see results. So we got to keep going. When I say we, I mean my former organization. But there's measurable progress. It's uneven. There's more work to do. And I think you understand, and everybody in the CX world understands that this is kind of a thing that's never really done, right? It's
Right, and
ongoing.
continuing to measure it, monitor it, and tweak your strategy is part of it, right? That's
Well, for sure. And I mean, one thing that I explain to people that, when it's their first time starting to look at, read, and interpret CX data and performance data, particularly CX data, particularly survey data. When you're tracking user experience over a long period of time, or user sat, or net promoter score, or whatever, if it's not getting better, it tends to just degrade. There's kind of an entropy involved. And we've seen that too. For the first year or so that we were tracking that metric, it kind of went sideways and went down a little bit. And we were making all the right investments to improve user satisfaction, but we just weren't seeing the effect yet out in the field. And then once they started seeing the effect in the field, the curve began to bend upward, and we started seeing the effect of what we're doing. So the but it's one of those things. This becomes an ongoing operational metric that any organization tracks. And if you're not getting better, the metric tends to kind of slowly degrade over time. So, got to
Well,
get
it's a
better.
good lesson learned too about, that it doesn't it takes a little bit of time to actually see the impact of what you're trying to do. So what advice do you have for other agencies, DoD or not? We know that DHS is undertaking a CX directorate within their CIO's office, and many agencies have chief customer officers that report at different levels in the organization, but
Well, lots of advice. I think the biggest thing that I see is these organizations need to pick standard ways of measuring performance, UX, CX, pick standard ways of measuring it, implement them, and start getting the data and using the data and interpreting the data. And I think sometimes I run into organizations that feel the need to set targets and then use the targets to define the metrics and all this stuff. And I think they overcomplicate it a little bit. And they feel like they're starting with the end in mind, which is always good. But I would recommend put the plumbing in place to get the data and learn from the data and use that to improve and set the targets that you need. I'm always about starting with the end in mind, but this is a case where you can set the targets and further flesh out the program once you start really digging into the data about your organization. So get the data first and then flesh out the rest of the program as you go. And then the other thing that I would say is I'm a huge advocate of a UX speaker educator named Jared Spool. And he does a phenomenal job. I highly recommend his Monday afternoon seminars on webinars, where he talks about how to approach user experience metrics. And, I'm going to mess this up a little bit, but one of the big things that he's an advocate for, and I am too, is that in the long run, the most important user experience metrics are really your operational metrics. So in the Air Force, the logistics people should be their best user experience metric is going to be something like mission capable rate or MICAP, right? It's the percentage of time that a plane is ready to go on a mission. That's their job. It's MICAP. And so everybody that's working on designing systems to support logistics, they should be designing their system and delivering IT that's capable of improving MICAP rate. And if they're not doing something that's going to help improve MICAP rate, then they ought to be rethinking that, right? And so that would be another one. I'm an advocate of standard user experience metrics and tracking, but also I am an advocate of you need ways to inform everything you're doing in UX and CX with the core mission metrics that are connected to what you're trying to do as an organization.
Yeah, it helps you make that linkage from the beginning.
100%.
Well, anything else that you would like to talk about?
Well, as you've probably discovered, I can talk all day about this, but no, I think I'll call it, that'll be it for now. But thank you very much for the opportunity.
No, thank you for taking the time. I know you're a busy man these days, so appreciate you taking the time. And so today we have with us Colt Woodall, who is currently the CEO of Bravo 17. And formerly the Chief Experience Officer at the U.S. Air Force, and now supporting the Department of Defense. So thank you, Colt.
Thank you. And thank you again for the invite. This has been great.
You're so welcome. Thanks for listening to the CX Tipping Point podcast. We would love to hear from you. If you have a chance, please rate and review. Hit subscribe to keep up with the new episodes and pass it along to a friend. And in the meantime, follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and tweet us at Doris Consulting.